All right, so have you ever wondered what happens when, like, one side in a legal battle wants a judge to just decide the case,
Yeah.
but the other side is like, no way, we want a jury?
Well, that's a great question.
It's a clash of legal forces.
Yeah.
And that's actually what we're diving into today with Beacon Theaters, Ink v. Westover. It's this Supreme Court case that really had a big impact on how trials work, even now, all these years later.
It's fascinating, right? And you know what's really interesting about this whole case?
What's that?
It all started with two movie theaters.
Movie theaters.
Yeah, back in the 1950s in California, they were locked in this like fierce competition.
Okay, so, like, picture this.
Yeah.
It's 1950s California, the golden age of Hollywood. We've
Yeah.
got Fox West Coast Theaters. They're the big guys, right?
Yeah.
They have these exclusive contracts for all the newest releases, all the hottest films.
Right, all the blockbusters.
And then you have Beacon Theaters.
Little drive-in.
Yeah, smaller drive-in, and they're trying to, get a piece of the action, get those moviegoers in.
Exactly. And Fox, being the big guy, they wanted to protect what they had.
Of course.
So they filed this lawsuit
Well.
looking for what's called a declaratory judgment.
Okay, so what is that? What's a declaratory judgment?
Basically, they were asking the court to say officially that their contracts, those exclusive contracts, were totally legal.
Ah, so it's like a preemptive strike.
Yeah, like a legal chess move to kind of shut down any potential challenges before they even started.
Smart, but I'm guessing Beacon wasn't just going to take that lying down.
You guessed right. Beacon fought back hard.
Okay, good for them.
They countersued, claiming that Fox's contracts were actually breaking antitrust laws,
Antitrust laws, meaning.
like creating an unfair monopoly, stifling competition, that kind of thing.
Got it.
And here's the crucial part. Beacon demanded a trial by jury to settle the whole thing.
Okay, so things are heating up. We've got a real legal showdown brewing.
Yeah, and this is where things get really interesting procedurally.
Procedurally.
Yeah, like how the trial was actually going to happen.
Right.
So the district court decided to hear Fox's claims first.
Okay.
But here's the catch. They were going to do it without a jury.
Wait, what? It doesn't seem fair.
Right. And this raised a huge red flag for Beacon.
I bet.
Because, you know, if the judge just decided in favor of Fox,
Right.
wouldn't that basically wipe out Beacon's entire chance of having a jury even look at their antitrust claims?
Even though it was all based on the same set of facts, those contracts,
Yeah, exactly.
that seems like a pretty big problem.
It was a huge
So
problem.
did the Supreme Court just let that slide?
No way. The Supreme Court stepped in and they sided with Beacon big time.
Wow.
They basically said, look, the Seventh Amendment guarantees a jury trial, and that right is more important than just being flexible with procedures.
So they were like, hold on, District Court, you can't just sidestep the Constitution.
Exactly. They saw right through what Fox was trying to do with that declaratory judgment thing.
So Fox's strategy completely backfired.
You could say that. And this case, this whole fight, it had this ripple effect throughout the legal world.
I can imagine. I mean, we're still talking about it now.
Right. It really forced lawyers to start thinking strategically about how they put their cases together. And it highlighted how crucial it is to protect that right to a jury trial.
Absolutely.
But to really, really grasp how important Beacon Theaters is, we kind of have to unpack all the legal and equitable issues that were swirling around.
Okay, so let's unpack this. What exactly were those legal and equitable issues, and why was the order of the trial so important?
Okay, so in the simplest terms,
Please, yeah.
legal claims, those usually involve someone trying to get money,
Okay.
like Beacon was doing with their whole antitrust lawsuit.
Right, they wanted Fox to pay up for the harm those contracts supposedly cause.
Exactly. Now, equitable claims, those are a little different.
Okay, how so?
It's more about getting a court order to make someone do something or, stop doing
Like a
something.
restraining order or something like
Yeah.
that.
Yeah, exactly. Injunctions and stuff like that.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
So how did all that play out in Beacon Theaters?
Well, Fox, with their whole declaratory judgment thing, they were basically going for an equitable remedy. They wanted the court to declare their contracts were all good and legal, which would stop Beacon's antitrust lawsuit dead in its tracks.
Ah, I see.
But here's the problem.
Yeah.
Both of those claims, Fox's and Beacon's, they hinged on the same basic question.
Which was.
Were Fox's contracts anti-competitive or not?
Ah, so if they decided the equitable claim first about the contracts,
Yeah.
that would essentially decide the whole legal claim without a jury ever getting to weigh in.
Exactly. That's the whole point.
Wow, that's sneaky.
Right. So if the judge had sided with Fox and said, yep, your contracts are fine,
Yeah.
Beacon would have been totally blocked from presenting their antitrust case to a jury.
Even though they had a constitutional right to do so.
Yeah, and that's a big no-no.
Wow. Okay, now I see how this whole case gets super interesting.
It's a big one.
It is. But before we get too deep into the legal arguments in the Supreme Court's decision, I want to zoom out for a second.
Okay.
And just get a clearer picture of the actual dispute itself. Like,
yeah.
What were those exclusive contracts all about? What made them so controversial?
Okay, so remember those contracts Fox had where they got to show all the new movies first?
The first run films?
Yeah. That meant they got to be the first ones in the area to show all the hot new releases.
It's like getting VIP access to all the blockbusters.
You're right. And it gave them this huge advantage.
Oh, I bet.
Meanwhile, Beacon was stuck showing second-run films.
So the movies that had already been playing at Fox's theaters for weeks, maybe even months.
Exactly.
Oof. Yeah, I could see why Beacon cried foul.
They were like, hey, this isn't fair. So they argued that these contracts were totally anti-competitive, that they were violating antitrust law.
Yeah, antitrust laws, right.
They claimed that Fox, along with a bunch of other big theater chains and those film distributors, were all working together.
Colluding, like a conspiracy almost.
Yeah. Yeah, almost. To create a monopoly, basically, and squeeze out the smaller theaters like Beacon.
So their argument was that this was ultimately hurting moviegoers.
Exactly. Limited choices, potentially higher prices, all of that.
Yeah, if Fox didn't have those exclusive deals, there'd be more competition, maybe lower ticket prices, wider variety of films to see.
Yeah. They were saying it would be a better experience for everyone if there was more competition.
Okay, I'm with you so far. But what exactly about these contracts did Beacon have a problem with?
Well, there was one detail that really threw gasoline on the fire.
Okay, what's this?
It was these things called clearance agreements.
Clearance agreements. That sounds ominous.
They were basically clauses in the contracts that determined how long Fox could exclusively show a film before any other theater like Beacon could get their hands on it.
So it wasn't just that they were exclusive. It was also about how long that exclusivity lasted.
Yeah, the duration.
And I'm guessing those clearances were pretty lengthy given how frustrated Beacon was.
You are right. The clearances they gave Fox were really long, which meant that Beacon was locked out of showing new releases for a really long time.
So the longer Fox held onto those exclusive rights, the harder it was for Beacon to compete. And it might even drive them out of business eventually.
Exactly. And that right there is a core principle of antitrust law.
Tell me more.
It's all about preventing practices that stifle competition and end up harming consumers.
It makes sense.
So you see how Beacon could argue that this whole setup was bad for everyone.
Yeah, I do. But you mentioned earlier that the theaters were about 11 miles apart.
Right.
Why was that distance important? Does geography even play a role in antitrust law?
Oh, it's super important.
Okay.
That distance, it goes right to the heart of whether there was actually what's called substantial competition between the two theaters.
So I'm guessing the closer the theaters are,
yeah,
the more likely they are to be considered, like, direct competitors.
Exactly.
And that would make those exclusive contracts more problematic.
Exactly. And that's exactly what Fox was trying to argue against.
Right, yeah.
They were saying, hey, we're 11 miles apart. We're not really competing directly, so our contracts aren't hurting consumers.
So they were trying to say they were operating in different markets, basically.
That's it. Trying to draw a line, saying, you know, our actions don't impact Beacon's customers.
Okay.
But Beacon, of course, argued the opposite.
What did they say?
They said, look, no matter the distance, we're still fighting for the same moviegoers.
Mm-hmm.
They said Fox's contracts were unfairly tipping the scales, giving them this huge advantage.
So this 11-mile distance, that became like a key point of contention.
It did.
Did the courts buy Fox's argument?
That's the million-dollar question.
Is it?
And it's one that the Supreme Court ultimately had to wrestle with.
I bet.
But before we get to their big decision,
okay,
I think it's important to, like, rewind a bit.
Okay.
And remember how this whole case moved through the courts?
Right, because this wasn't just about movie contracts.
No, it was way bigger than that.
It was about the very right to a jury trial.
Exactly. That's what makes Beacon Theater so important, you know. It highlights the tension between just following procedures and protecting these fundamental constitutional rights.
Absolutely.
But before we jump into all of that,
okay,
I think we need a little recap just to make sure we're all on the same page.
Yes, please.
Can you remind us what went down in the lower courts?
Right. So let's see.
Okay.
Fox filed for a declaratory judgment, right?
Yeah.
They wanted the court to say their contracts were A-okay.
Yep.
And then Beacon countersued with their antitrust claims, demanding a jury trial.
That's right.
But then the district court decided to hear Fox's claims first, and they were going to do it without a jury.
That's the gist of it.
That sounds a little fishy to me from the get-go.
Right. It raised some eyebrows.
What did Beacon do about it?
Well, they fought back, of course. They appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Okay.
And they asked for this thing called a writ of mendemus.
A writ of what? Now, okay, I'm going to need you to break that down for me.
Yeah, of course. Think of it like a legal emergency brake.
Okay.
Like, if a lower court is totally veering off course, a higher court can pull this lever, this writ of mandamus, to force them back on track.
I see.
So basically, Beacon was asking the Ninth Circuit to step in and be like, hey, district court, you have to give them a jury trial.
Because denying them a jury was a violation of their Seventh Amendment rights.
Exact.
But I'm sensing a but here.
But unfortunately, the Ninth Circuit didn't agree with them.
Another setback for Beacon. So they lost in district court. They lost in the Ninth Circuit. Mm. Where do they go from here?
Well, they had one last shot, the Supreme Court of the United States.
The highest court in the land.
The big leagues. And thankfully for Beacon, the Supreme Court decided to hear their case.
Wow. Okay, now things are about to get really interesting.
This is where it all comes to a head.
All right, so last time we left off with Beacon taking their case all the way up to the Supreme Court after losing in the lower courts. Pretty big stakes, huh? So what happened when the highest court in the land took on this whole movie theater showdown and the right to a jury trial?
Well, the Supreme Court ended up siding with Beacon.
They did.
Yeah. And their decision, it really shook things up in the legal world.
I bet.
Justice Hugo Black, he wrote the majority opinion, and he really emphasized how important the Seventh Amendment is.
The Seventh Amendment, right. That's the one about the right to a jury trial in civil cases.
Exactly. And he even said that any attempt to, like, limit that right should be looked at super carefully.
Okay, so it sounds like the court wasn't playing around when it came to protecting that right.
No, they weren't.
So how did they apply that to Beacon's case? Specifically,
they saw what Fox was doing with that declaratory judgment as this kind of sneaky way to avoid having a jury decide the big question,
which was
whether their contracts were anti-competitive or not.
Right. Yeah.
They were basically trying to let a judge decide all the key facts, which would have totally tied the jury's hands in Beacon's antitrust lawsuit.
So the court recognized that if they decided the equitable claim first about the contracts.
Yeah.
It could basically make the jury trial for the legal claim meaningless.
Exactly. The jury wouldn't have anything left to decide.
Was that a key part of Beacon's argument all along?
Oh, absolutely. Beacon's lawyers were really sharp in how they brought this whole issue to light.
They were good.
Yeah. They argued that if the judge just decided that the contracts were fine in the context of Fox's equitable claim,
right,
it would prevent them from proving their whole antitrust case to a jury.
And the Supreme Court saw the danger in that.
They did.
That's some really clever lawyering on Beacon's part.
For sure.
They basically took what seemed like this straightforward contract dispute and turned it into this big debate about constitutional rights.
Exactly. Elevated the whole conversation.
It's impressive. But I'm a little confused.
Yeah.
Don't the federal rules of civil procedure give judges some leeway in how they run trials?
Yeah, they do.
Wasn't the district court just doing what it was allowed to do?
Yeah, you're right. The federal rules do give judges flexibility.
Okay.
But the Supreme Court in Beacon Theaters made it very clear that that flexibility has its limits.
Okay.
Especially when it comes to bumping up against constitutional rights.
So it wasn't about saying judges can never separate legal and equitable claims.
Right.
It was more about saying you can't do it in a way that messes with someone's right to a jury trial.
Precisely. Justice Black, in his opinion, he was very specific.
Oh, so?
He emphasized that because the right to a jury trial is a constitutional right, while there's no similar rule about trials by the court,
right,
the judge's discretion is very limited and has to be used to protect jury trials whenever possible.
He said very narrowly limited.
Yeah.
That sounds like a warning to judges not to mess around with the Seventh Amendment.
It kind of was. Even though the federal rules allowed for some flexibility, the Constitution was more important when it came to that right to a jury trial.
It makes sense.
So Beacon Theater set a very important precedent.
Tell me about it.
It said that when legal and equitable claims are all mixed up like this, courts absolutely have to prioritize jury trials for the legal claims.
They have to.
Yep. They can't just sacrifice that fundamental right for the sake of procedural efficiency.
It's a good reminder that our whole legal system is about trying to balance efficiency with protecting people's rights.
It is. It's a constant balancing act.
Sometimes you need to adjust the rules to make sure those core principles aren't being ignored.
Right, exactly.
So did the Supreme Court actually tell the district court what to do differently? Did they give them, like, a roadmap for handling these kinds of situations going forward?
They did. They actually sent the case back to the district court.
Oh, wow.
And they told them to hold the jury trial on Beacon's antitrust claims before deciding Fox's declaratory judgment.
So they completely flipped the order.
Yep. Jury trial first, then the equitable claim.
What a statement about how important juries are in our system.
It really was.
It's like they were saying, judges, you can't just assume that equitable claims should always be decided first. You need to actually look at the situation and see how your decisions might impact someone's right to a jury trial.
They have to think it through carefully.
It's a good reminder that judges, even though they have a lot of power, can't use it to undermine those basic constitutional rights.
Absolutely.
I imagine this decision had a pretty big impact on how courts do things.
Huge impact.
Yeah.
Beacon Theaters basically changed how lawsuits are structured and fought, especially when there are both legal and equitable claims involved.
It's like the case that every lawyer and judge needs to know inside and out.
The classic.
It really is. This whole thing started as a fight between two movie theaters, but it ended up raising all these important questions about judicial power and fairness in the courts, and that evolving relationship between law and equity.
It really is fascinating how something that seems like a small procedural thing can have such huge implications for justice.
It is.
Beacon Theaters really forced everyone in the legal world to think hard about these complex issues.
And how to protect those fundamental rights without sacrificing efficiency.
Exactly. It's a tough balance.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about the legal and procedural side of Beacon Theaters.
Yeah.
But I want to touch on something else I think this case highlights.
What's that?
The importance of strategic lawyering.
Oh, absolutely.
Beacon Theaters is like this perfect example of brilliant legal strategy in action.
It really is.
It shows how a seemingly small procedural detail can actually determine the entire outcome of a case.
Yeah, it's all about strategy.
Lawyers need to be super sharp and think many steps ahead.
Especially when they're dealing with both legal and equitable claims.
Beacon's lawyers, they deserve a lot of credit for their move with the Seventh Amendment.
They do.
They turned what could have been this pretty ordinary contract case into a landmark decision about constitutional rights.
They took it all the way to the Supreme Court.
They did.
And their strategic thinking and their commitment to those rights, it paid off big time.
This case shows that even when things seem impossible procedurally, clever lawyering and that commitment to upholding those constitutional rights, it can totally change the game.
It's inspiring, really.
It is. We've covered so much ground today.
We have.
Legal strategy, constitutional law, the impact of precedent.
It's been a deep dive.
It has. But before we wrap up our discussion of Beacon Theaters,
okay,
I want to hear a little bit about the dissenting opinion.
Oh, yeah. Good point. It's always important to consider different perspectives, even in these big landmark cases.
Did any of the justices disagree with the majority's reasoning?
They did. Justice Potter Stewart, along with Justice Harold Burton, they wrote a dissenting opinion.
What did they say? Did they think Beacon wasn't entitled to a jury trial? Or did they just have a different take on the procedural stuff?
Justice Stewart, his dissent mostly focused on the procedural side of things.
Yeah.
He basically argued that the majority went too far by issuing that writ of mandamus.
Which, reminder, is a pretty rare legal maneuver.
Right. It's not something you see every day.
So he agreed with the Ninth Circuit's decision to deny Beacon's request for it.
Exactly. He felt that the district court was within its rights to structure the trial how they saw fit, and that the Ninth Circuit was right to not interfere.
So for him, the majority was overstepping by issuing the writ of mandamus.
Yeah. He felt like they were stepping on the district court's toes.
So the disagreement was about how much deference should be given to trial court judges?
Right.
And the use of mandamus as a solution?
Yeah, that's the heart of it.
Were there any other big differences between the majority and the dissent?
Yeah, Justice Stewart also disagreed with how the majority talked about Fox's declaratory judgment action.
Okay.
He said that just because a declaratory judgment is an option doesn't automatically turn an equitable action into a legal one.
Ah, okay.
He was worried that the majority was kind of blurring the lines between law and equity, which could cause problems down the road.
Yeah, I could see how that could lead to confusion and inconsistency in future cases.
Exactly. He was thinking about the long-term implications.
It's interesting because this case really is about so much more than just two movie theaters fighting over contracts.
It is, yeah.
It touches on these big questions about judicial power, fairness in the courts, that whole relationship between law and equity, which has been evolving for centuries.
It's deep stuff.
It is. Beacon Theaters really made everyone stop and think about these complicated issues.
And how to protect constitutional rights while still making the legal system work efficiently.
Right.
It's a challenge.
Even though the majority opinion won out in the end, Justice Stewart's dissent reminds us that there are often multiple valid perspectives on these complex legal matters.
Absolutely. It's rarely black and white.
Okay, before we move on to the legacy of Beacon Theaters, I think it's time for a little break.
Sounds good.
We'll be right back to explore how this groundbreaking decision continues to shape the legal landscape today. All right, we're back and ready to wrap up our deep dive into Beacon Theaters.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey.
It has. From those movie theaters in California all the way to the Supreme Court. We've talked about legal strategy, all those procedural twists and turns, and how Beacon Theaters really highlighted the importance of the Seventh Amendment, that right to a jury trial.
That's a big one.
It is. But now I want to talk about the lasting impact. How did this case actually change things in the legal world? What lessons can we learn from it even today?
Oh, Beacon Theaters, it really had this ripple effect throughout the legal world, and you can still feel its influence today.
Okay.
That strong defense of the Seventh Amendment by the Supreme Court.
Right.
It set a precedent that courts still follow today when they're dealing with cases that have both legal and equitable claims.
So it's not just about movie theaters anymore.
No, not at all.
It's about this fundamental principle of how our court system balances those different types of remedies.
Exactly.
So Beacon Theaters didn't just fade away after the decision.
No, it's much bigger than that.
It smells like it really set a path for how similar cases would be handled in the future.
It did. In fact, Beacon Theaters played a key role in a couple of other really important Supreme Court decisions.
Oh, yeah? Which ones?
Dairy Queen, Inc. v. Wood in 1962, and Ross v. Bernhard in 1970.
Okay, I've heard of those.
Both of those cases really helped to clarify the right to a jury trial when legal and equitable claims are all mixed up.
They're both big deals in civil procedure.
It's huge. Dairy Queen, it really drove home that right to a jury trial in these kinds of cases.
Yeah.
And Ross v. Bernhard, that extended the right to shareholder derivative suits, which people used to think were just equitable.
So Beacon Theaters really set off this chain reaction, expanding the right to a jury trial into all these new areas of law.
It's pretty amazing, right?
It is. It's incredible how one case can have such a massive impact on the entire legal system.
It shows how powerful precedent can be.
And how thinking carefully about those constitutional implications, even for something that seems like a procedural rule, it can really make a difference.
It can change everything.
The impact of Beacon Theaters goes beyond just expanding that right to a jury trial, though.
Yeah.
It also taught lawyers some really important lessons about how to approach their cases.
It's like a masterclass in legal strategy.
Okay, I'm all ears. What are some of those other big takeaways from Beacon Theaters?
One of the biggest is that how you frame your client's claims, that can be just as important as what those claims actually are.
Okay.
Beacon Theaters showed us that there's a real strategic advantage to going for legal remedies because those trigger that right to a jury trial.
Right.
Instead of just relying on equitable remedies, which are decided by a judge.
It's like a game of chess, huh? You have to think a few moves ahead, choose your arguments carefully to get the best outcome.
That's a great analogy. And Beacon Theaters also gave judges some valuable guidance on how to handle these cases that have both legal and equitable claims.
Yeah.
It reminded them that efficiency and convenience, those things can't just override that constitutional right to a jury trial.
Right, right. It's a delicate balance that judges have to strike.
It is.
They have to ensure a fair trial.
Mm-hmm.
But also manage all the practical realities of these complicated lawsuits.
Exactly.
Beacon Theaters really emphasized that judges, even though they have a lot of power, they have to use that power responsibly and make sure they're protecting the rights of everyone involved.
Everyone deserves a fair shake.
It's been so fascinating taking this deep dive with you.
I've enjoyed it.
We've covered so much.
We have.
From those movie contracts to constitutional law, the art of lawyering.
That's all connected.
It is. But before we wrap up completely, I have one final question for you.
Okay, shoot.
Beacon Theaters was decided way back in 1959.
A long time ago.
It was. Is it still relevant today?
Oh, absolutely. The principles that came out of Beacon Theaters, they're just as important now as they were back then.
Wow.
Maybe even more important now.
How so?
Lawsuits are so much more complex these days.
They are.
They often involve this mix of legal and equitable claims, even more so than back then.
So it's not just some old case that law students have to memorize for an exam.
Nope.
It's a living, breathing legal precedent that still affects how we think about trials and the right to a jury.
That's exactly it. Beacon Theaters is a fundamental part of modern civil procedure.
Okay.
Those lessons about the Seventh Amendment, about strategic pleading, about responsible judicial decision-making,
right,
they're still guiding lawyers and judges today.
It's amazing how these principles from so long ago can still be so relevant.
It's a testament to the enduring power of the Constitution.
Well, I think it's safe to say that Beacon Theaters is a case that everyone should understand.
I agree.
Lawyers, law students, anyone who cares about how our legal system works.
Absolutely.
It's a powerful reminder of the importance of precedent, strategic thinking.
Then, of course, that right to a jury trial.
That's right. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Beacon Theaters.
It's been a pleasure.
We hope you learned something new and interesting about this fascinating world of law.
Always keep those legal minds sharp.